I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest. How are we all doing today? How are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
It finally feels like fall. It's a little cold.
It feels like fall suddenly and
very
hard.
Suddenly.
Starting yesterday, really.
Yes. As of yesterday, it is now fall. It looks like fall. It feels like fall. It is chilly. My toes are cold.
But that is not the question I wanted to ask. The question I wanted to ask is, I was reminded watching this episode that you have a history of sailing off the Florida coast.
I do. And you know what? The entire time we were on that trip, we were actually trying to stay ahead of a tropical storm.
So yeah, I was going to ask, did a storm catch you?
Storm did not catch us.
You were never in a storm.
We had a day that it rained really bad.
Okay.
And I was on this, it was like a 100-foot schooner.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of like three people that were not seasick on this entire trip. So the first night, and then I'll get back to the storm story.
Is your brother, how pukey was your brother?
No, my brother and me were not seasick ever.
I need more stories. I need to embarrass my brother-in-law.
Aside from like the three like people like that work this boat normally and were like leading the trip, it was me, my brother, this other girl, and then a guy.
Mm-hmm.
The four of us were the only ones that were not seasick out of like 20 people.
That is a crowded boat.
It was a big boat. So the first night, I remember, because we had the option, like, you could sleep below deck on, like, the hammocks, or you could sleep on deck, which was, like, cooler.
Mm-hmm.
We had to do, like, watch rotations, too, because we were, like, anchored out at sea.
Right.
My watch rotation was that first night. I was on my watch. I could just hear people puking over the side of the boat. And, like, it'd be, like, three people, and then someone else would start shuffling over there, and bleh. Just puking. But so, there was one day, again, we were trying to stay in front of this, like, tropical storm that was in the area, and it never affected us, but we did get one day where, it poured when we were out at sea. Everyone except, again, those of us that aren't seasick, that was literally it, everyone else went down below,
because
they're like, I don't want to get wet. You don't want to be down below if you get seasick. That does not help you.
It doesn't help your friends or nearby either, that's for sure.
So the rest of us stayed up above, and we showered in the rain because of how heavy it was raining. We just all, like, in our swimsuits, were, like, pulling out our shampoo and showering because it was just pelting us. I think I had I remember it was painful because that was when I had third-degree sunburn on my back, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was from the first day of snorkeling. And this was like a week-long trip.
So I had another question to ask. You've probably already answered it. But since you weren't caught in a great big storm, what is the worst thing that happened to you on that trip?
I got third-degree sunburn on the first day.
So that was the big crisis of the trip.
For me, which is not the first time I've had third-degree sunburn in my life, nor the last, but it was really bad. I blistered. I peeled. I became really close with one girl on the trip.
Sure.
She would adjust my bathing suit straps.
to be exactly in the line.
Yes. And even though I had multiple bathing suits I packed, I could only wear this same suit the entire week because the straps were all different. She also would peel my back. When it started flaking and getting really bad, she would just, like, pick at me like a monkey. I don't remember her name, but I really do appreciate her. We actually had matching swimsuits.
Oh, that's so nice.
We didn't, like, plan that. I'd never met her before this trip, actually. Have never talked with her since either.
If you're out there, mystery girl, and you also have an interest in 1993 SeaQuest DSV airing on NBC Sundays,
I appreciate you.
What are the odds?
You made an impact in my life. You helped me in my time of need in a way no one else would. That and, like, seeing a barracuda go after something and then never wanting to snorkel again. Those were kind of my moments. The sharks aren't the scary thing. It's the barracudas.
Sure,
they're
sure.
They're faster.
They've got that song. Yeah,
you
absolutely.
See their teeth all the time. I did not like them.
Anyhow, we are here to talk about episode 10, Bad Water. This is written by David Kemper and directed by Brian Spicer, both of which were last seen on this show, in those roles at least, with Treasures of the Mind.
Ah.
The Treasures of the Mind team has been reunited.
Well, let me tell you, this was their moment.
This is way better.
This episode is so good. There's nothing about this episode I don't like.
I have some conclusions to draw at the end. I have an angle that I'm coming from that I'm going to hold back until the big reveal, Le Prestige. But I think this is one of the absolute best episodes of Sequest. All 3 years, all 57, I think, episodes.
It's so good. It had to be absolute hell to film.
for some of them, for sure.
For four people specifically. Badwater starts off with us checking in on not the Sequest,
no,
but a French sightseeing sub somewhere at the bottom of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm. Because French is the official second language of Sequest DSV on NBC Sundays.
So within this sub is a whole bunch of crying children.
Yeah, not just sightseers, but this is like a school field trip.
Yes, the French tourists have come all the way over to the Caribbean for a school trip, I guess. I'm a little confused on what they're, like, why they're sightseeing this far from home.
They're foreign exchange kids. I don't know.
I don't know.
But something...
They're a little young for that, honestly.
Something happened to them. Their submarine went down to the bottom, and their pilot did not make it.
This is something I don't normally pay attention to, is that the fact that there was a pilot and the pilot is dead, and all I can think about right now is, where is the body? Because it's a pretty small sub, and we do not see the body.
Well, we're gonna, like, keep cutting back to this, obviously, as time goes on, to ratchet up the tension. And in the front, in the co-pilot seat, is a lady named Claire, and in the back with all the kids is their teacher. And we never really look at the second seat up front. He might just be in there the whole time.
This explains why the children are crying the whole time, as they can see this dead guy. I do want to talk about these ladies, like, their outfits.
Mm-hmm.
They have, like, pink lady satin jackets, but in baby blue.
Sure, sure. They're the blue ladies.
They're the blue ladies. But they have red and white striped shirts under, which I feel like is just the most, like, well, they're supposed to be French.
Can we get some baguettes here? Maybe craft services can lend us a hand.
Some berets? Berets. We need some berets. I feel like they originally had berets and, like, little neck scarves or something.
We got a note from the producer. They can't be smoking all the time. If we want people to care about their oxygen running low.
So they are radioing for help. And so we go to the Sequest. And
right off the coast of Jacksonville, Florida. Apparently they were at Hooters.
Yeah, why not? You know. and so O'Neill is hearing some of this.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that. Is the one that tells us the pilot got killed when the sub went to the bottom. But, like, the sound, like, they can't hear him, and the sound that they are hearing makes it sound like they're in a well. Like, mm-hmm. It's getting all messed up. There's a lot of stuff going on. There is a hurricane in the area.
Yeah, they also keep talking about, like,
iron ore deposits.
Right, messing up their radio and their magnetic resonance. And there are so many weird aspects of the geography, the geology, the telemetry, that they can't really trust their sensors very much. And
you know why? Because they're in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes, yes. As Crocker leans over to the captain and says, welcome to the Triangle. And there's even an insert shot of one of the screens showing a map and, like, drawing the line
I love that as an official navigation yes. tool, is here's where the triangle is.
For all the folks at home that have heard of the Bermuda Triangle but don't know its boundaries, we're going to draw them
for
you.
We're going to make sure you know. It's smart. It's kind of the time before people could just Google things.
Absolutely. So, yes. Yes.
Bald guy is back.
Bald guy is here.
Bald navigation dude. We have not seen him in a while. He is back.
His character is Helmsman Carlton, Mr. Baldwin.
I had no idea his name was Carlton.
His name is Carlton. You can tell because of the dance. He is played by Dan Hildebrand, who went on to be in Gone in 60 Seconds, a 3-episode role in Game of Thrones, a 7-episode role in Sons of Anarchy. He's around. He's doing things. Okay. He's making moves.
Okay. Is he still bald?
I don't know. His IMDb picture is. I don't know if he's, like, permanently bald in everything, but it's an option.
Yeah, I bet, like...
He keeps it at hand.
I didn't know if that was, like, you know, a choice or just... That's what his head looks like.
He's like Montel Williams. You know, it's a trademark. It's how you know it's Dan Hildebrand. He's bald.
Yeah. Out on a SeaQuest launch, we got Krieg, we got Ford, we got Lucas, we got Westphalen. They are one of the launches that is out trying to find this sub.
They are the rescue crew, right?
We've one of them.
We've got our sort of action man, our doctor, very useful, and also we have Krieg and Lucas.
Yes.
Krieg is putting his, like, recent pilot certifications to use. He's driving.
He's driving. He's getting some weird-ass readings. All the stuff is glitching away. Just like on the SeaQuest. Stuff's going on there. We got Westphalen radioing out to the French sub. We got Lucas radioing out to the French sub in perfect French.
Yes.
Let's remember... A few episodes ago.
He's a quick study. He learned French real quickly to be hailing the, quote, sous-marin du tourisme.
Yeah, let's remember Give Me Liberté over there. Okay?
Guy Peach.
Boy is a quick study.
Yeah, he's a genius.
He's a genius. He can take over O'Neill's job. Screw you, O'Neill. Lucas is coming for you.
It's been 2 weeks and he learned a language.
And so they're getting no answers back. Ford is checking in on them, kind of like, hey, you know, we're between the solar flares, the magnetic readings, things aren't going well. Most of the launches have been called back to the SeaQuest. We're probably going to be called back too soon. But before anything can happen, Krieg yells out that he is getting some really weird readings, that they are getting very heavy all of a sudden.
And they look out and they see an ocean hole. The bottom of the ocean is a big hole.
Yes.
They're following a whisker, and the whisker gets sucked in the hole.
And they get sucked in the
hole. They get sucked in the hole. I love this segment because Krieg is, you know, he's struggling with the controls. He's doing everything he can to lift them out, but he can't lift them out. And so Ford just starts calling out orders to drop every bit of weight, starting with the batteries.
Yes.
And Krieg's like, but without the batteries, we'll... And he gets cut off, and Ford's like, drop the fucking batteries.
Like, okay.
And they drop the manipulator arms, and they drop the ballast... They don't just empty the ballast tanks, they drop the ballast tanks. They drop everything, including their, like, escape pod.
Survival pod.
Yes.
And on that one, like, Krieg, like, pauses and looks at Ford, and then it's like, Okay. And it isn't until that is actually the thing that makes the difference, because at first it seems like it's not, but then a moment later they start to rise and float back to the surface.
Cut all weight possible, and they are finally buoyant as they rise to the surface.
And they're radioing SeaQuest that they're on a mayday. Basically, it's like if we're lucky, we're gonna make it to the surface. We may not, but like... Hopefully, we'll keep floating.
And that is the note our cold open ends on as we go to the opening title sequence.
With very uplifting orchestra music.
The last three in particular are really hard breaks.
I
think none more so than Give Me Liberté, but still.
I love the closed captions because it's like at first like inspiring orchestra music. And then by the time the credits are ending, it's uplifting orchestra music. And then when we go back to the show, it's suspenseful orchestra music.
Which is playing over a bunch of B-roll of waves and water.
Looking lovely. Mm-hmm. And then looking like death.
Yeah.
We go to the SeaQuest, and they have been in radio connection with Ford, that they know that the survival pod doesn't exist, They know that the seas are calm and that they are on the surface. But before they can find out more, they lose the connection.
But from what they heard, conditions sound really calm, which is weird for a hurricane a-coming.
Yeah. And then Crocker's like, nothing's calm on this side of the planet. Like, I don't...
So they must be somewhere in the forming eye of the storm, which is a 60-kilometer radius. That's not quite enough.
This hurricane is within the Bermuda Triangle, of course. Crocker actually says, like, it's gonna give birth to a hurricane. As though that's where it normally happens. Like,
I mean, kind of.
I mean, it is, but he's saying it as though, like, that's the reason.
Right, right. It is generally the point where a tropical storm reaches hurricane speeds.
Yes. The Sequest is not going to be going to look for them, though, because their focus is on the French sub. So they are radioing the Coast Guard to send out planes and choppers and whatnot to go look for them since they are on the surface.
Right. Our trusted crew of professionals were leaving them to the surface searchers, but we, the Sequest, are the only boat that can possibly save these dying children.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to do.
Yes.
And we gotta trust Ford and Co. to keep themselves safe in the meantime.
Yeah.
So we meet them, and Ford is immediately going by the book in their tiny inflatable raft.
They do get in radio contact with Ford one more time. They, like, cut back in, and they make a plan that they're gonna check in every 15 minutes.
Right, right.
Like, okay, we're gonna do that. And they do know that the Coast Guard are the ones that are supposed to be looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they got some more information.
Yeah.
But on the raft, Krieg does have a head wound that Wes Phelan is treating. He bumped his head trying to open the hatch once they hit the surface. Lucas is fishing random things out of the water that are left over from the launch.
Right.
And Ford gives him the direction to inventory all of the food and rations and make a 7-day plan.
Yes!
And everyone looks at him like, what the fuck?
Better safe than sorry. That's what. Yeah.
And then he's like, Krieg, can you fish?
And Krieg's response is, I had a grandfather, yes.
I love Krieg in this one so much. I love him so much. And before anything can happen there, though, West Phelan pulls some seaweed out of the water and is like, this is Sargasson seaweed. We're kind of screwed.
Yeah, yeah. She identifies by the seaweed that they are in the Sargasso Sea, which is a region of the Atlantic Ocean that, of course, overlaps with parts of the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes.
That is inside a swirl of its own currents, which leads to a number of conditions, including very, very few fish. It's not going to be an effective use of anyone's time.
Yes. One thing I love about Sequest is all the different locations that are talked about.
Sure, like, yeah. The many trenches.
The trenches, Sargasso Sea, all these. Lots of things I have to Google to know specifically, where the fuck is that? And then I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm not a sailor.
But Lucas recognizes the Sargasso Sea for the history of bad sailing. It's where Columbus got lost for a while, which does not fill him with a lot of hope.
Yeah. And Krieg is very like, Ford, are you planning to, like, stay out here longer than us or anything? Because, like, why we need a 7-day plan? And Ford is not having this. He snaps at Krieg, tells him he needs to, like, act like a lieutenant in the UEO Navy, that he needs to cut it. And tensions get a little thick.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that wasn't very nice. Krieg, like, has a point, Ford.
Have we ever considered Commander Ford particularly nice?
Yes, actually.
I don't know.
I think he can be very nice.
He's certainly a good man. How often is he a nice man?
He can be a very nice man. He's a nice person. He's just a serious person.
Yes.
But he has, like, some very soft moments with, like, crew members throughout the seasons.
That's true. That's true.
Let's his guard down a bit. He drops the seriousness.
I am again reminded that I never really got a handle on who Ford is until episode 14, 17. Like, we'll eventually get there.
Yeah. I love Ford.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's also, like, a sassy motherfucker. He's a secretly sassy motherfucker.
Yeah.
And I love it. He just saves it for the opportune moments.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But back on the Sequest, Dr. Levin is giving his PowerPoint presentation.
He's a geologist now. He's a rock guy.
About sinkholes and caverns beneath the ocean floor.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, sometimes they're filled with air. Sometimes they're aquifers and they're filled with fresh water, which then like pulls things down.
Because the difference in buoyancy between fresh water and salt water.
Mm-hmm. How they can actually get big enough to, like, swallow the Sequest. FYI.
This is all very necessary background to, like, explain the conditions that the submarine and the other submarine will find themselves in.
Yes.
And we need a scientist to deliver it. And Westphalen's indisposed.
She busy.
So I guess we're just going to say that sinkholes are like the ghosts of rocks, right? The rock died and went away, and the sinkhole is what's left. And that's why Dr. Levin is so interested in them.
I do love, though, that they have not made him the Bermuda Triangle man in this case, though. They've given that to Crocker.
Right, because he's the shipwreck guy.
And Crocker is just over there like, man, the triangle never runs out of stuff to throw at you, Cap.
Now, if I didn't have a dear affection for the fourth and, I believe, final appearance of Dr. Levin, that is a series wrap on Dr. Levin,
which
I believe.
Which I never understand, because they were really trying to build him up, and then he just disappears.
Then I would have given this to, like, O'Neill or Ortiz or anyone with a technical job. Frankly, Hitchcock.
Yeah, because she got the probe.
Because she's got the probe. She knows this sort of thing. Or she's definitely a person who you would believe cracked open a book in the commercial and is now the leading expert on this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But instead we have Levin, which is fine.
We check in on the French sub and they are very much running out of oxygen.
Yes.
Things are worrisome. Up on the raft, Krieg points out the fact that they're not that far from the coast, and it's kind of weird no one's found them yet. Westphalen is like asking everyone, like, hey, you know, is anyone having trouble with their ears? Which they all are, and that's because the barometric pressure is dropping.
And so they know what that means. A storm is a-brewing. And if a storm is brewing, but it looks really clear, oh no, we are in the eye of a hurricane.
Yes, they are.
So everyone's up to speed here. I don't know why that wasn't communicated in their every 15-minute calls, but whatever.
This is a great question, especially because, like,
they would need to know that.
I mean, they don't know where they are, but you think they would be like, hey, that tropical storm that was in the area before is looking worse. Hopefully you guys aren't by that.
Mm-hmm.
But back on the Sequest, it has been named a hurricane officially.
Yes, this is Hurricane Sheila building up around them.
O'Neill has been, like, obsessively radioing out to the French sub. So much so that when he goes to speak to Bridger, he forgets he's speaking French for a second. And I was like, oh, let me rewind and do that in English. But he has not been able to make contact with them in 2 hours and is worried that they're even still alive.
And Bridger's like, hey, don't sweat it. Radios die sometimes, but we can't believe that the kids did. So we just got to keep going, got to keep trying.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about this episode is everybody gets a little moment of character,
yeah,
and a lot of pairs get established, even ones you didn't expect would ever be a pair.
Yeah.
And this little O'Neill moment is so much more than he's had to do since he was half psychic in the second episode.
Yeah. Well, this episode, I feel like, aside from that one with O'Neill, this episode is what starts to establish O'Neill and Ortiz.
Yes.
As bigger characters on the show.
It's a big one for Ortiz stepping out as a member of the ensemble beyond the guy who says what the sonar says.
Yes.
Yes.
And also starts to build that they have a relationship and that they, like, talk to each other outside of work.
In our last TV podcast, Sex Archie, We often said you could tell when the showrunner, Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, did one of the scripts himself, because every character had like 5 seconds that was just so indelibly them, right? Yes. Reggie would have this incredible moment, and it would be the only time he's on screen because the plot's not about Reggie this week. Mm-hmm. It would be great. And you could say that about anybody in the cast.
Yeah.
And I feel like this episode is David Kemper, producer, writer on Sequest, doing the same thing.
Yes, absolutely. This is very much an ensemble episode. Even just with the fact that, like, Baldi's back and has some great moments. Yes. Like, there's a moment later that it's perfection.
Yeah, very near the end. Like, in the last act.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's just so good. And it's the type of stuff that just makes episodes so good is when you remember that your entire cast exists.
Yeah, when you remember that they are characters
in this environment.
And not, you know, plot delivery elements.
Yeah. So Bridger and O'Neill also have a little bit about, like, O'Neill brings up the fact that, like, he is, like, can't stop thinking about, like, Ford and them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Bridger's like, we have to focus on the sub. That's who we're here for. They're gonna be okay.
It's only episode 10. It's not even sweeps. Calm down.
So we go back to the raft, and Ford is trying to check in with the Sequest, but it's not working. The radio isn't. So he's like, hey, Lucas, is there a way to boost the signal? And mm-hmm. he's like, oh, well, you know, if I had some wire. Krieg just happens to be holding some wire fishing line.
We strip the nylon. There's a steel core in the fishing line.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh my gosh, yeah, let's Apollo 13 this shit. Let's go.
Yeah. And so as Lucas is starting to do that, the biggest bolt of lightning happens and scares the shit out of everyone, and the radio falls into the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, and Lucas goes after it, but he can't pull it up. It's dragging him down, so Ford jumps out to pull Lucas out. And it's this chain of rescues. They finally get back, but the only bit of the radio they have left is the handset.
Yeah.
And while Ford and Lucas are in the back of the raft getting situated, in the foreground is just Krieg flipping around the disconnected coil in disbelief that they're totally cut off now.
And I love this sequence because it's so fast. It moves so fast.
Yes, yes.
And I will say the shot they have of, like, Lucas diving into the water is insane. I'm like, how does he propel himself over and out of the raft?
It's just like mid-sentence talking about, oh, well, we've got wire here. We can rig something immediately in a flash because it's lightning. But it's so tight a pivot that as soon as you thought there was hope, it's worse. Yes. It's worse now.
Yeah. So back on the Sequest, Ortiz and O'Neill are, you know, at their little stations, and they're like, wait, we got implosions in the water.
They are so good at their jobs that they can identify these weird sounds they're hearing as a radio falling down into the ocean.
Oh my god, that must be Ford's radio.
So, you know, hey, silver linings here. We have a passive sonar fix on the sound of the radio falling. Let's go in that direction.
And Ortiz is like, yes, but let's remember the giant iron ore deposits below us. We can't trust anything we're hearing, especially if there's fresh water in the area.
Right. Signals are getting reflected and refracted. And it's...
So maybe we can go that way, but there also might not be anything that way. Because it's the Bermuda Triangle and everything sucks.
So Captain Bridger is like, all right, anything you see, treat with suspicion. We're going to do the math longhand to figure out where we're going and what we're doing. Do not put faith in your screens.
Yeah. Back up on the raft, the wind is picking up,
mm-hmm.
and Wes Phelan, being the motherly type she is.
It's snack time. What a mom. What a mom she is.
Everyone needs to eat. And so she's handing out the granola bars, and Lucas has his, and it is, Krieg looks at it, tears it from his hand.
And everyone's like, whoa, hold on.
Wes Phelan's like, there's one for you too. Like, and he's like, no, this is like foil. This is like metal, reflective, plasticky foil stuff.
Like granola bars do.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Can we bounce, like, can sonar bounce off of this?
Radar.
Radar. Can radar bounce off of this? And they're like, oh my God, tear open all the food. And Westfield's like, save the food, though. Like, don't. Because Krieg did throw that granola bar out into the ocean.
7 days, what are the odds? So again.
It's like the that episode of Gravity Falls with the cameras. Okay, we got 50 cameras. We'll be fine. And throw the cameras overboard? Okay, we got 45. No, we got 30. Yeah.
I was going to, again, talk about, like, Apollo 13, The Martian. We're going to put people in a problem, and then they're going to improvise a solution. And then we take away the improvised solution immediately and show them even worse off, so they have to go back to deeper roots, more, like, problem solving. If you like those movies, you will like Bad Walker.
This is true.
It's the exact same loop, and it's so good.
Just no potatoes.
There's no potatoes. There's no moment where your heart breaks as Tom Hanks realizes they're coming in shallow because they were supposed to be carrying tons of moon rocks.
Yeah. Apollo 13 is such a good movie.
It's the only good thing Ron Howard brought to the world.
It is such a fucking good movie.
Well, that and like the Arrested Development narration. But that's it. That's the only two things.
So
Bryce Dallas Howard. Three things.
There you go. So, yeah, they're doing all that and unwrapping their food, getting tape from the medical supply kit. They're going to make this work. Back on Sequest, Bridger goes to Darwin and is like, hey, buddy, search and rescue.
Because if all their digital stuff is breaking, what's more analog than a dolphin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so first Bridger has to explain what fresh water is. And he's like, do you know what that is? And Darwin's like, water is water. And so he dumps a bucket of fresh water on Darwin. And Darwin is like, bad water, don't like. And spits it out at Bridger. And he's like, yeah, don't swim in that. When you come across that water, don't go there. It's bad. And so he instructs Darwin to find Lucas.
Yes.
And the raft.
Darwin's favorite thing to do is find Lucas.
And to maybe keep an eye out for a sub, too. But, like, find Lucas.
Especially when Lucas is with a girl. He loves to just watch. Are you getting another first kiss, Lucas?
Back on the raft, the storm is fucking going.
Yes, yes. They have built their radar reflector. They're dragging it around on the fishing line to make themselves a bigger target for all these search planes and helicopters that they're told are coming for them.
But it is absolutely dark. The wind is just tearing at them, and it tears their wrapper flag away into the wind.
Every advantage they build gets stripped away, and now they have unwrapped soggy granola bars to show for
it. And they're like, oh, how can this get worse? And then it just starts pouring. And they're like, God damn it.
Not in the eye anymore, huh?
No.
No. No.
Back on the French sub, everyone is still crying.
What do you think was the like indemnity language on those permission slips? Who's at fault here? What sort of responsibility is held by whom?
Again, I'm just like, what are you sightseeing?
The Caribbean, the fishes, the coral.
I mean, is that it? Is there to see like the coral? I guess that's why you're in a sub.
All the shipwrecks of the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, that'd be cool. I'd do that.
Okay, so would the French children.
I will point, did you see the one kid's doll?
I did not see the kid's doll.
She had a fucking creeping, like, China doll.
Yeah?
Yeah, like, with the, like, eyes that blink and, like, the porcelain. It looks like it'd be possessed. I think there's a ghost in that doll.
I think it shows how fragile they all are in their position.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But we get a zoom in to find out that they are fragile. They are turning on their second to last air tank.
Yes, yes.
Shit ain't looking good for them. So back on the Sequest, this is when O'Neill and Ortiz get their little friend moment, because O'Neill, like, waves at Ortiz and, like, hand signals for him to go to, like, channel 4. And they both get on their little channel to have a little chat.
Yeah, they have a little private conversation that's mostly about their fears and anxieties.
Yes. That, you know, all their readings aren't working well, that, you know, doing all this stuff manually, like, they're shit at it. What if they don't find them?
O'Neill is just visualizing dead children all day long.
And Ortiz is like, stop it.
Stop it. Don't do that.
But before they can, you know, talk about much more, Hitchcock hops in and is like, guys, get up, stop it. Because she saw that hand signal as well, and also tuned in.
She knows what four means.
She knows what four is.
It's not really a sophisticated code.
So, they do have a moment, though, in this conversation where they also, like, talk about the triangle, and Ortiz, like, buys into it a little bit more, and O'Neill's like, what? You don't believe that, do you? And he's like, well, superstition starts somewhere. There's gotta be some truth to it.
The captain was punched by a ghost last week. What do you mean you don't believe a little bit?
Exactly. Like, some of... So Bridger comes onto the bridge and goes to Hitchcock. She is like, hey, the communication buoy we got out there... it's kind of like a giant lightning rod, and there's a lot of lightning in the area.
We need to make a call here, like up or down. We gotta think about this risk reward here.
Yeah, she's like, this is past regulations, and he's like, leave it, it's fine.
They need to talk to people. They need to be talked to.
Yes, especially to try to hear from the two groups that need rescuing.
Right.
So up on the raft.
This bit.
Lucas is like, I think I see lights. And
he's got binoculars. He's scanning the horizon.
Yes, the very dark horizon where it's very wet. Because they are in the middle of this hurricane. No one else sees it, but he's like, no, I think I see it. But then he has just this moment of absolute, like, sorrow of they've forgotten about us.
The raft, like, following each crew member on the raft, you see, like, a lot of their emotional truth, right? So much of Lucas, in this very scene in particular, is about how he insists so hard that he's not a child. He doesn't want to be treated as a child. In fact, he throws that out so hard, it keeps other people from relating to him, which is what this scene's really about. But it's also so clear that you might not be a child, but you're not fully grown either.
Yeah. Well, and this also, like, this whole, like, they forgot...
What a way to describe a 16-year-old, but yeah.
This they've forgotten about us thing. He's been abandoned by his family
by his dad.
multiple times in his life.
It's his, like, dad. It's his dad, always.
Yeah, he doesn't expect anyone to stick around or come look for him. Even if he's with other people on a raft that they're supposed to be rescued from. Like, he still is in this point of, like... thinking he doesn't matter.
Right,
and
right.
And within this scene, we get Krieg, who is there to give the pep talk. Like, hey, kid, no, this is character building.
He's the chummy guy. He's swell.
Yeah, and Lucas is like, you don't need to do that morale officer stuff on me. And Krieg's like, stop. Like, this is who I am. Like, I am... Mr. Optimistic, Mr. Glass Half Full, like, this is who I am.
And Lucas counters it with, glass half full of what, Ben? Oh, it's good. It's a good shitty teen thing to say.
It is, because he's, like, so mopey, and it's the polar opposites of them.
Like, you couldn't say shit on TV. NYPD Blue didn't exist yet, but, like, you know that's what he meant, and it's really good.
But in that moment, Krieg looks out at the horizon and is like, wait, that's your lights! And we see the communication buoy is out there.
And it's your dolphin, because Darwin has arrived too.
And so they're so excited to see Darwin, and they're like, you gotta go tell the Sequest that we're here! And Ford's like, do we think he understood that? Fuck, like, I don't speak dolphin, I don't know.
Your computer voice is a real cool magic trick, kid, but I don't know if I believe.
But then, unfortunately, Wes Phelan realizes that the communication buoy is a giant fucking lightning rod. And they're in the middle of this storm. And so they're like, oh my god, we all got everyone get down low. And, like, Lucas is, you know, doing hand signals telling Darwin to dive and to get out of there. And as soon as Darwin, like, starts to dive, the communication buoy gets struck by lightning and there's an explosion and everyone's, like, ducking for cover.
And there is, like, a post-production After Effects lightning bolt that goes down from the explosions on the buoy, following the cable that runs umbilically into the aft of SeaQuest, and you follow it all through the skin and cut to the bridge where it's running over the ceiling archways as Bridger looks up and watches lightning move through his ship.
And then everyone's station explodes.
SeaQuest says, listen to women. They know about lightning.
Maybe follow regulations. There's a point that they're there.
But again, it's bad. It looks a little better. How can we make it much, much worse? That's the loop up on the surface over and over.
When we come back from what would have been their commercial break, they are setting up the coolest looking emergency lights. It's like a mic stand with one tube fluorescent light on it that is battery operated, I guess. And they just have these everywhere and they're goofy looking. But at the same time, I love it. And I love that they have emergency lights that they actually manually have to put up. That's something you never see in a lot of sci-fi shows because there's always the emergency
backup. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But they truly are, like, they don't have power.
They've just got batteries.
Yeah. I love it. I love that they're having to set these things up.
So, yeah, we've had 9 episodes. Well, 8 and a ghost story. But 9 episodes about all their wonderful tools. And now they've all failed. They're all gone.
Yes. And Bridger's going around checking on everyone and the different stations, and all the stations are dead.
They're dead. Their cables are melted. Their chips are fused. It's all basically a table with buttons on it.
Yeah. And some of the only things that are okay are actually the whiskers, because the whiskers aren't connected to the ship, by a cable or anything. They're out there free floating. So Bridger comes up with the idea to bring one inside. And put it right there on the bridge.
Crack it open like a walnut.
And leave the other one out. And then also he's like, hey, you gotta open the, like, doors because Darwin's still out there too. And we gotta see what we can do here.
So when you've lost your sonar and your hyper-reality probes and your sea crabs and your self-healing skin and all of these things, what do you have left? What do you have left?
You have a boat. That kind of floats.
Full of sailors singing a working song.
Because Crocker looks around the bridge at everyone being sad and in pain and worried and decides, you know what? This is my moment. And he starts singing, What Shall We Do With a Drunken Sailor?
Of course
and
he does. And eventually,
everyone joins in.
Including the concertina out of nowhere.
What shall we do with the drunken sailor? What shall we do with the drunken sailor? Early in the morning, Godspeed, the whales are running. Godspeed, the whales are running. Godspeed, the whales are running.
I hope this is diegetic. We don't see it, but somebody just had that under their station.
I love it so much. I want to know why Crocker works on submarines and isn't, like, on a fishing boat. Like, or, I feel like that's more his vibe.
Why didn't he get, like, assigned as the one, like, legitimate Navy guy on, like, the USS Constitution National Park ship?
Yes.
Right? That's yes. Where he belongs.
Oh my god, he would love that.
Well, I mean, he would hate being tied up at dock 365 days a year, but otherwise,
he
you know.
He could tell his stories, he could sing his songs. Like, I just question. Like, he's such an old-timey sailor man.
So the guy that played Chief Crocker, this is absolutely his favorite moment the character got through the first season.
Yeah.
And it's easy to see why.
Oh, yeah. Again, it's one of those moments that just screams the character, right?
Right,
like, it spotlights it. And
this is the old salt who is married to the sea, Neutral Milk Hotel, that's him,
mm-hmm.
inspiring the little sliver of that in all these young whippersnappers who feel the call of the deep blue.
Yeah. So back up on the raft, it's really fucking wet.
It's so wet. Lucas has even fallen deeper into despair and his abandonment.
Darwin is dead!
Darwin's dead.
And Ford is the one that's there to comfort him now. Like, you don't know that. He's probably fine. No, he's dead! And so Ford gives him a task.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It's the one way to break this teenager out of his depression to give him a thing to fix.
So yeah, when Lucas has a moment with Ben Krieg, Krieg is the chummy guy who has to insist, I'm not treating you like a kid. This is who I am in my soul.
Yes.
And when he has a moment with Ford, it's like, I read in a book somewhere that's going to distract someone from their emotional distress. Fix this. Go.
And so he asks Lucas to take the camera and make it so it continuously goes.
Yes.
Like, it can just keep, you know, clicking away. The idea is, like, did he have the idea for the camera first and then was like, yes, Lucas can fix this? Or was he like, Lucas needs to fix something? You know what? Let's try this.
Lucas needs a fidget right now.
And what I love is Lucas also asks, he's like, well, do you care about the film? And this is one of those moments of Ford that I love where he chuckles and says no. Because I think it's such a character moment of where, I mean, he understands Lucas in this moment. Like, Lucas is suddenly so focused on the task already.
Yeah. I need the parameters of the task so I can make successful solutions. Yes.
But it's like such a silly like question of it. Like, no, I don't need the film. What am I taking a picture of us?
I love that Sequest DSV, Sundays on NBC's, like, vision of 2018 involves film cameras.
Yes!
With a battery-operated winding mechanism to advance the film.
Well, I will throw out that this is a part of probably the emergency supplies, I guess.
Right, so you have some vacation photos. You're gonna want these memories.
You have a picture of everyone before they die? I guess. But yeah, film cameras. That's what we have in this time.
And thank God we do.
While Lucas is working on that, Wes Phelan is like, you know what? If one of us goes overboard, we're never going to come back. We're all going to drown. So what we should do is we should take this rope and we should tie this knot and this knot and this knot. And she gets very specific and, like, you know, because this one will hold, but this one will undo really fast. And, like, this will work really well. And then we can be tied to the raft. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And she's like, here, go ahead, tie those knots. And Krieg and Ford look at her.
Krieg's just like, knot tying's not really one of the Submariner's skills.
And she laughs the fuck at them. She's like, oh my god, this is amazing. This is you Navy men don't know how to tie fucking knots.
Again, like, what's her role in the premiere, in To Be or Not to Be? It's to have, you know, one of these guys, to have Ford be like, oh, these useless eggheads don't know their way around a ship. And now she's literally tying knots around them.
Yes. It's so good. So back on the Sequest, they are...
You think she did any, like, sailing as a scout as a girl?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
What was she? She would have been born in, like, the late 60s, I think.
Oh, she was definitely in a Girl Scout, like, Mariner's troop. Yeah, she was a Mariner. Absolutely believe that. Because that was back in, like, still peak Mariner time.
Yeah. She would have been doing that in the early to mid 80s, I guess.
Mariners were still going really strong then.
If she's 50-ish, yeah.
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 Yeah. I believe this. So, back on the Sequest, they are sawing into a whisker, and we get to see what the inside looks like.
You know who else counts this among their favorite episodes?
Who?
Initial executive producer and show creator, Rockne S. O'Bannon.
Oh, really?
By this point in the show, you know, after delivering a script and handing off, the producer reins before they even started filming it, He's just a spectator. He's just an occasional viewer.
Yeah.
While he's working on other things. And in interviews from around this time, when he's working on Farscape and it's still called Space Chase.
Yes.
He's like, you know, every once in a while they had an idea that I really liked. That time where they brought a whisker in and they cracked it open and rooted around in there. I thought that was a fantastic use of some of the ideas I put in the pilot. That's great stuff.
I mean, it honestly is a great thing, too, because it's the like the one time we see a whisker out of the water,
mm-hmm.
and a close-up of what it looks like, not in CGI, and right. then what it looks like inside.
And for scale, for scale. Once, frankly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, scale, is because you don't get the scale.
We never see it next to a diver in the CG exteriors.
No.
Right, yeah.
No. And it is quite large.
It's a big boy.
Yeah.
You could curl up in there. You could keep Wesley Snipes in there at the beginning of Demolition
Man.
It
can be Lucas's new room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why they've brought it in is because it has power. So they're going to use it as a battery. And Hitchcock's like, so we can do a couple things. I can either give you one station at full power, or I can give you all of them at like very little power. And Bridger's like, I want one station at full power. She's like, okay, which one? All of them.
Yep. They're going to
But individually.
They're going to do a rotation. Everyone gets their desk for 30 seconds. We get 30 seconds of comms, 30 seconds of sensors, 30 seconds of helm, etc. They're probably skipping tactical. I don't think that one's important right now.
And all I can think is, wow, it's really good that your systems don't have to reboot. They just work all of a sudden again. So Darwin, though, is back. He's made it back to the Sequest.
He's in the moon pool, in C-Deck, and he's real fucked up.
He's real fucked up. He encountered fresh water, and he's really blistered.
I think the blistering is more from the lightning burns.
Maybe. The way they talk about it, it kind of implies that it's from the fresh water.
Which confused me, because that doesn't make sense.
Because it does. Because I was like, why? I didn't know a dolphin would blister from that. So it would make more sense if it was from... The lightning.
And if he did, why did you pour it on his face, Bridger, you freak? You monster.
Well, I mean, maybe there's something about the amount of fresh water you're exposed to.
But I think these are meant to be electrical burn blisters on his skin.
Okay. The way Bridger says it, though,
no,
is...
No, I agree. I absolutely agree.
The way it's written is, oh, and he's blistering, you must have encountered fresh water.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just... But, Darwin is like, yep, bad water. There were people and lights. Mm-hmm. And also Lucas found Lucas. He found the sub and he found Lucas.
Found everybody. And Bridger is just like, all right, we got to get you fixed up. Take care of him. Because he knows he can't do anything to act on this information.
No.
Let's give our best friend some time to cool off, heal up before we grill him for this information. But yeah. He's got it.
So on the raft, Lucas is still trying to fix the camera. And it's now Wes Phelan's turn.
Everyone gets their Lucas moment up top. Yeah.
Which I love. Mm-hmm. I love this. Because it's a great way to get everyone something when you're literally trapped on this tiny ass raft.
Yes.
Like, how do you focus on certain characters?
Mm-hmm.
And they do it really well through using this method of let's check on the child.
Yeah, yeah. Like, in the context of the show, it's easy to say, well, Jonathan Brandis is their heartthrob. He's the second star of the show. Of course, everything centers on him. But in the fiction, it's the three professionals who are checking in on the underage volunteer. They know who needs help.
Yeah, yeah. She asks how he's doing, and he doesn't say anything. And she's like, you know, I'm pretty scared myself.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, it's okay to be afraid. And he's like, well, they aren't, gesturing back to Ford and Krieg. And she's like, you really think that? Like, that's bullshit, Lucas.
You've met Krieg.
He's fucking terrified of everything.
He is absolutely certain. I mean certain. He's going to die.
And now you can say that you had a moment where you were absolutely certain you were going to die too. So the next time he asks you that, you can be like, yes, yeah, actually, Krieg, you were there
you
for
were
it.
You were there. You know.
It's not the first time either, actually. So Lucas in this moment of her, you know, confiding and mm-hmm. setting him straight, admits like that his hands are shaking, and she makes the joke of, how can you tell? Because they are getting batted around by right. a fucking hurricane. And she gives him a good hug.
It's a hug and a little kiss from Dr. Mommy. Yes. Aww.
And he goes back to trying to get the camera to be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Or broken properly.
Broken properly, yes.
Altered.
So we check in on the French sub. They're still there. They're still crying. They're still radioing.
Do you think the French ladies are in love?
Yes.
In this scene in particular, I'm like, these French ladies might be in love.
They smooch.
If they weren't at the start of this, they will be at the end.
They've been brought together by
mm-hmm.
trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Krieg and Ford are in love?
Oh my god, I would have loved that. That would have been amazing, because they're such polar opposites.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That would have been so good. It would be everything I love in a show.
There should have been an episode where, like, something happened, whatever the justification is, but Krieg and Ford have to be roommates. And that's, like, the C-plot, the comic relief C-plot of some episode.
Yeah, that would have been amazing.
I C-plot and I eat it. There you go. I know. We got listeners who just, like, shot upward Pavlovian style. I know you're out there.
So back on the Sequest Bridge, Bridger is coming back down, and Crocker greets him. He was up, like, fixing some stuff, and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Crocker's like, you know, the Whiskers are almost ready to test. But they gotta have a little chat first. Because
mm-hmm. they're best friends.
And so Bridger's like, well, how's the crew doing? And he's like, I have run out of sea shanties. I know no other song to teach them.
So it's been about 14 hours, I think. Guy's a bottomless pit of sailor lore.
And through this conversation, Crocker calls Bridger out
mm-hmm.
on the fact that he cannot blame himself. And Bridger's like, it was a risk worth taking, and the lightning blew up in my face, literally, type thing. And he's like, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Lucas.
Letting him go on the rescue off in the first place.
Like, I know you are beating yourself up about the fact that he is out on that boat. And he's like, yes, I am. He is 16. I never should have.
The line is, he's only 16.
And Crocker points out the fact that, like, Lucas wanted to help, and you could not have kept him on board not helping. Like, he's a member of this crew. Like, he wants to do good. Like, you could not have known what was going to happen.
Look at brothers and sisters. He wants to be involved in rescues. He wants to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a situation where you can't hack them off the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
So he's going to get on the launch, he's going to throw blankets at kids, and yeah, save the day.
Yeah. So Crocker ends up giving him this pep talk of mm-hmm. like, stop feeling guilty. You know, kind of a, you care about him, you care about everyone, you're doing the best you can.
Right.
Now let's go test that Whisker.
This is, after 10 episodes, the first time people speak openly about their feelings
mm-hmm.
and are clearly guided by their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Finally! This is a show with characters! Mm-hmm. 10 episodes in.
And in,
not that it never happened, but it never happened this much.
It never
this
happened.
Directly, this foregrounded.
Yes. And what I do also love within this is we are addressing things that have been known, been mm-hmm. hinted at, but as you said, it's straight on.
Right.
And this is such a character establishing episode because of all these little conversations.
Mm-hmm. The David Kemper script that I keep going back to compare this to is in season one of Farscape, the one where Moya splits into like different color-coded parallel dimensions.
Yes.
Because that's the one that ends with family dinner.
It's
the one that starts with the crew having a big fight over a meal
mm-hmm.
and ends with them all like bonding and laughing together and good-naturedly ribbing at family dinner.
Yeah.
That's this episode for Sequest.
Yes, it is. Absolutely is. So it is time to test the whisker to see if all the it's going to work to power the stations, and they're going to start with O'Neill Station first.
And so there's a work montage. We just silently the score plays as we go station to station.
What I love though to start it off though, when they're getting ready to like start with O'Neill Station, is they're kind of like, you might want to stand back. We don't know if this is going to like explode or not. And O'Neill's just like
two big steps.
But yes, work montage. We're going to this station. We're going to this station. They seeing people shake their head. I didn't get anything.
They even do some of the like shake heads and shrugs that you expect from like a makeover try and close on at the department store style montage.
And like then like frustration that they still aren't getting
and
further.
And then a big thumbs up.
But then we start to check in on different ones. So like when it's O'Neill's is done, we're finding out that the hurricane has gone up to a category 3. When it's Ortiz's time and it's almost up, he's like, wait, I got a sinkhole view because of the other whisker that's out there. And so he pops the video up and it zooms out and there are dozens and dozens and dozens of sinkholes across the ocean floor.
Mm-hmm. It got better. How do we make it much worse?
All the sinkholes in the world.
All the sinkholes in the world. So, no. But Bridger does not see it that way. If he does, you never see it on his face, not in front of the crew. He's like, all right, here's the job. We're going to go to the sinkholes. We're going to check them. The ones that have fresh water, we look down inside, and we're going to find these kids. And Hitchcock says, like, she runs the numbers in her head and says, that could take days. And he says, no. It's only going to take 2 hours.
Otherwise, the children are dead.
Yeah. And that's not an option. That's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. So sometimes when Sequest predicts the future, it is wildly off.
Yeah.
Film cameras in 2018.
Yeah.
But there's one prediction in this episode that is almost exactly on point.
Which is it a hurricane or a sinkhole?
It's sea shanties
becoming
a very big deal in 2020, only 2 years off.
Yes, it did. It did. All over TikTok, let me tell you.
And much like the sea shanties, and much like the sea shanty wave of TikTok, it wasn't really shanties, it was just the one. The people only really sang the one. And we just talked about there being others in theory.
There ended up being a couple. It was mostly just one.
It was just Wellerman and anything else is a lie.
Well, there was like the song from the Pirates of the Caribbean, one of the sequels, where it's when the hanging is happening at the beginning of the one movie.
I think that's the first movie.
No. When they're going to hang the child?
Excuse me.
And the others?
I get confused because it's the first movie I saw, which is the second movie.
Yeah. I was like, isn't that the first one? Yeah. So when like all like you're the child pirate and like all the other adults are like all going to get hung and they're singing a song then, that one also ended up a lot out there.
Sure.
And it was blowing people's mind because they didn't know that it was from the movie. But yeah, sea shanties, you know, they're pretty good.
Back up on the surface in the life raft, we've been talking about this being a succession of the adults talking to Lucas, but we kind of ran out.
Yeah.
It is time to cover a pair that you never even considered would be a pair of characters to interact.
So as they are, Krieg and Westphalen are... It just makes you cackle.
Yeah, just the idea of it.
They're bailing water out of the raft. Krieg just turns to her and is like, I need to apologize to you. And she's just like, oh, I knew it! You did eat my lobsters!
You gotta label your science lobsters. They were in the refrigerator. You eat things in the refrigerator.
And after she is done being mad at him, she's like, were they good at least? And he's like, yeah, they were pretty good. I love this moment.
I think we need to have a whole staff meeting. There probably was a staff meeting, but like, we need a refrigeration unit in the science labs.
Right?
Because if I keep having to use the galley fridge, people are going to eat my science lobsters again.
Well, and I just think about, what's his name, Mr.
Yafikoto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
His character name.
Whatever it was.
Yeah. I just think about him doing his, like, tour and being like, why are there science experiments in the galley? Like, yeah. This is against regulation.
I'm also thinking, what was the test done on these lobsters? Is Krieg okay? Are his guts gonna survive?
But they are interrupted because Lucas finally got the camera fixed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And everyone's very excited, and Ford takes it, and he starts clicking it to use it for Morse code.
Yes, yes. Lucas has devised a pattern of winds and clicks so that it produces continually on a loop the Morse code for MR7.
I don't think that's how it actually is going on.
No?
No. It's not a continuous thing. He did not set it to do Morse code continuously on its own. What Ford wanted was for him to, I thought it was to be able to, like, just continually be able to get it to click.
Okay.
And Ford is actually the one that's doing the Morse code on it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, it happens. They do the, they're spelling out MR7, but then it stops.
Right. But in any case, MR7 is the designation of their life raft. That is their call sign. They were using it back when they were in radio contact.
Yeah. I also just feel like it would be far too complicated for Lucas to figure out how to get it to specifically set to a pattern and then repeat it.
Sure.
And I think it makes more sense that
he's a genius. He made the dolphin dog.
That Ford is like, yes, if I you know, rotate this way for this long and this quickly. So we have to go check in on the French sub, who is still crying. And they are turning on their last air tank.
The last air tank.
Back on the Sequest, they have found out that the search planes have all returned to Florida because they were low on fuel.
Our raft friends are on their own, but the one at a time piecemeal searching of the sinkholes has found a train.
Yes, because a whisker has gone into a sinkhole and it is getting pulled down. It's getting heavy. And there is just a train in the bottom of the sinkhole.
An old locomotive. And Crocker leaps into action because he knows about train wrecks too.
He's like, oh, it probably fell off a cargo ship 100 years ago. It totally makes sense that it's in the middle of the ocean.
Which, well, yeah, when you...
Yeah.
It actually does. Yeah
actually. that makes sense, Crocker. Thank you. But then Bridger starts to think, and he's like, huh. So we've encountered 4 freshwater sinkholes on the same axis, running along the same shelf. And so he starts to think, and he's like, hey, we're gonna move in this direction on my mark. Bald dude is like, until when? And he's like, I will just know.
I'm just gonna feel it. He's
okay. And so
he's just following his gut.
And so they are, and bald guy's like relaying the commands, and Bridger's like staring at a little level.
Yes, yes. Like he's doing home carpentry.
And he's like, okay, and a little bit more. And bald guy has his moment of a little bit more eye. This is the dumbest ass command I've ever relayed. What the fuck does this mean?
This is a man whose entire career has been bearings and compass headings and degrees of motion, and now he has to call out the order a little bit more.
And then Bridger's like, stop, that's it. And they send the whisker out. Bridger goes to Darwin, who's looking a lot better. And they have a little chat where Darwin is providing more information that
light in bad water hole,
and that it was near sand that moves. And so they figure out that there is a landslide near this sinkhole, and Darwin learns a new word, which is landslide. He gets very excited about this.
Ah.
Oh, landslide. Yeah. Ortiz is like, yo, Captain, there's a landslide just over there in the direction you were taking us.
The whisker has seen its reflection in a snow-covered hill.
You were totally right about the, and a little bit more. Yeah. What the fuck? So up on the raft, they are obsessively trying to bail out water.
Yes.
And Ford's like, it's actually okay. This thing's going to still float. The problem we got, though, is that the batteries are running out on this camera. And they do not have any spares.
But then another problem rises.
A giant-ass wave comes.
Huge wave comes for them out of the storm. Everyone is wearing their life vests that
haven't been inflated yet.
Right. You pull a ripcord, they immediately inflate. Yeah. That's the sort of situation we've got going on.
So when Ford sees this wave, he yells out for everyone to inflate their vests. And he can tell that Lucas is kind of frozen in the moment looking at the wave.
So he dives and pulls Lucas's ripcord, saving him. As he is washed off the raft, man over Ford.
But, you know what? Wes Phelan can tie really good knots.
Yeah!
And so they all grab a hold of the rope and start trying to pull Ford back in, who has not been able to inflate his life vest still.
Mm-hmm.
And they eventually get him back on.
And then pull that cord for him.
Yes.
As they all, like, hold hands in this nearly capsized raft.
Yes. Over on the French sub, everyone's still fucking crying.
Yeah, the teacher has started singing a song to soothe the traumatized,
yes.
Much like Chief Crocker or Maria Von Trapp.
Yeah, but then there's a very loud noise and the ship rocks and everyone starts screaming. Because you know why? Because the Sequest just grappled them.
The Sequest has set down on the mouth of this sinkhole. It is longer than the sinkhole is wide, is straddling it. Has lowered down a cable to attach from above as it rests on the seafloor above.
And because they of the way the whole one station at a time works, O'Neill wasn't able to communicate with them that they were doing this until after it happened. So now he's telling everyone, like, hey, it's okay, don't worry.
I love when they cut to the Sequest. Everyone is cheering and clapping and, like, you haven't saved anyone yet. You still have to get them. This seems premature.
And then Levin tells everyone that he needs immediate acoustic sounding.
Do you think Levin's actor, Timothy Amundsen of Psych, etc., found it interesting that every time his character was in an episode, he had a different, like, specialty? Because he was like a medical doctor the first time, right? In Games, I think?
Yes.
And then he was, like, studying the bio-terror in Gimme Liberté. And then he was a ghost man, and now he's a geologist.
He's multi-talented, like Wes Phelan.
Sure, yeah.
She's everything. And, you know, it runs in TV Doctors.
Apparently it's the only way to get onto this boat, is to have so many disciplines.
So he needs this acoustic sounding, though, to give him a image of what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that they aren't just on the opening to this sinkhole. They are actually on the opening to a giant cavern that's just as big as them. The whole thing that he was like, you know, the sinkholes can get big enough to swallow us. That's where they're at.
And the mouth of this cavern that they're sitting on is starting to crumble away from them, which you see little animations on his tiny view screen demonstrating.
Mm-hmm. He points out the fact that debris is falling onto the craft, which isn't great, and everyone is screaming down there.
As we get much more impressive visuals of, like, CG exteriors, these giant boulders crashing down.
Yes. And so the problem here is that the ceiling's collapsing. If it collapses, this thing is, as we know, is filled with fresh water, and it's big enough to swallow the Sequest.
Right.
So if this...
They will not have buoyancy in non-salt water.
Mm-hmm. And so it's the question of, like, do they let the craft go to save themselves, or do they risk it? And Bridger is like, we are risking this.
That's not a question. That's not even an option.
Nope. He has got the plan. Because at first they're like, okay, if we, like, release the ballast tanks, they will, you know, float. But then he's like, wait, no, actually, we need to flood them so that way it makes us heavier and we crash through the ceiling, and then the salt water will rush in and it will, like, if we, like, do the tanks again at the right time, it will, like, bounce us back up.
And there's another very handy visualization in Levin's little animation screen.
It's amazing that it listened and it just did that.
It just does that.
It just did it. It was like, ah, yes, here you go. This is what will happen.
I don't know how scientifically sound this is, but compared to like the last three episodes, I'll take it. I will.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, fine.
And so they do that. And guess what? It works.
And now the kids are screaming and cheering as O'Neill calls to them in French. They finally make contact. Kids love the UEO.
Yes. But then O'Neill is having to yell at the crew to stop yelling and clapping because he hears something.
Everyone is shocked, absolutely flabbergasted to hear that O'Neill can raise his voice, the little dweebus man.
He had to yell and tell everyone to shut up! And he's picking up a signal, and that is of the camera doing Morse code saying MR7. And so we go up to the raft, and everyone is just, like, holding on, just completely swamped with water. They're just getting pummeled still. The camera goes up above them, like, looking down. And as it's, like, looking down at them, we see lights rising from below them.
As the sea begins to churn beneath them, it looks like they're getting alien abducted from below.
Yes.
It's great.
It's great. And they slowly are like, what's that noise? What's... And... Krieg is sleeping through this.
He can sleep through anything.
And Westphal has to be like, wake up, wake up! And they realize that the sea quest is below them and that it's coming to save them and they're all gonna be okay. And the episode ends with, like, the camera panning around all of them in the raft.
Right.
Being like... happy and relieved.
It's this multi-axis camera move to go from the overhead shot back into the raft and then look around to Krieg, Westphal, and Lucas, and then back around the other way to see Ford smiling in relief that, you know, no one died on his command. He saved everybody. He did his fucking job.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's so good.
It's so good. It's such a cool, like, sequence of shots, too. I love this episode so much.
It's the best.
It's so good.
The biggest weakness of the first season of Sequest DSV is it so rarely takes the opportunity to treat its characters as characters. We learn facts about them, but we don't spend time with them in their feelings, in their relationships, not nearly as much as I would want to.
Yeah.
So to get an episode that is all of that all the time, that is also this very tense rescue where they are just losing every advantage, throwing their resourcefulness and their moxie against an uncaring sea that doesn't fucking give a damn, but still pulling out by the skin of their teeth. It's amazing.
So good.
It's so good.
If you're listening to this show and not watching it, go watch this episode.
Watch this one. Watch this one. Watch the last one too, because it's something else entirely. It's a good ghost story, but this is a great sequest.
Yes. And this is why, now that you've heard about it all, why I said, wow, this must have been shit to film for four of them, because they were wet the entire damn time.
Just wet. Just sitting in ass swamp wet.
Like, they had to have been prunes.
But that's not the end of the episode.
No, because we got a Bob fact.
Bob Ballard comes on to talk about sinkholes and how they are common off of the Florida coast. And his very special submarine baby, Alvin, explored one that was 1,500 feet down off of the Florida Keys. We're proud of you, Alvin.
Good job. So do you have a Bob fact?
Do you have a Bob fact? I have a Bob fact.
I have a Bob fact. Go ahead with your Bob fact.
My Bob fact is about the time a storm was named Sheila.
Oh.
Sheila was used to name a 2005 tropical cyclone in the South Pacific with peak winds at 45 miles an hour. I think the raft would have been okay.
We had that wind yesterday.
But if you want to talk about an actual storm that crossed through the northern bits of the Bermuda Triangle, mm-hmm. where the Bermuda Triangle and the Sargasso Sea overlap, that would be Hurricane Florence in 2018.
Ah.
Which was a Category 4 that made landfall in mid-September, killing 54 people and causing $24 billion in damages, primarily in the Carolinas.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of actual 2018 to compare with fictional 2018.
There we go. Well, my Bob fact is about the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes.
Obviously. So the earliest suggestion of unusual disappearances in the Bermuda area appeared in an article in the 1950s, actually,
mm-hmm.
in the Miami Herald, and then was distributed by the Associated Press and was in a whole bunch of other newspapers.
Sure.
2 years later, a magazine published a short article called Sea Mystery at Our Back Door. And that was the first time where anyone laid out the familiar triangle of what it looked like and what places were included.
What are the points of the triangle? What are the boundaries?
Bermuda to Puerto Rico to the southern tip of Florida, right before you get into the Keys.
Right.
Yeah. That is the Bermuda Triangle. Mm-hmm. Though there's been over the years, different versions of that. There was apparently one time where the triangle stretched all the way over to the UK or something, which I was like, that's a really big triangle.
I'm sorry, that's the Irish triangle. It's a different thing entirely.
Bermuda Triangle is something that, people try to say all these things happen there, all these things. It's very more shipwrecks there, more planes going down, more people disappearing. And it's really no different than anywhere else. And one of the things that commonly gets left out of things about the Bermuda Triangle is mentioning the fact there was a hurricane or a tropical storm or various bad weather that happened along there.
There was a war happening.
There's also a war. That is an area that's very active in weather problems. Mm-hmm. There are many other various explanations that can also happen too. But one of my favorites was that some try to say that the explanation for disappearances is focused on large fields of methane hydrates, which is a natural gas, on the continental shelf. There have been laboratory experiments that have proven that bubbles can sink a scale model of a ship by decreasing the density of the water.
Much like a large pocket of fresh water from an aquifer filling a sinkhole.
Yeah. And then anything that would wreck in the Gulf Stream would quickly be dispersed.
Right.
There have been publications that have described that there are large stores of undersea hydrates worldwide, including along the Blake Ridge area, which is in the southeastern United States. But according also to that is that there's been no large release of gas hydrates in the Bermuda Triangle area in 15,000 years. So yes, it could, but no.
Anything could happen. It could have been a big gorilla. There are big gorillas. Not there, sure, but there are big gorillas.
But I find that one, interesting, because that's probably, one of the least ones you hear about, and it's kind of connected to, the density. And, so that's my Bob fact.
Thank you very much.
It was a long fact,
your many-faceted Bob facts.
I know, it was facts. My Bob facts.
Bob facts.
But it was interesting.
Bob doesn't get enough time. We're covering for him.
I'm giving him new material.
Bob should just host a whole show.
Yeah.
Bob should get 30 minutes, not seconds.
Is our next show just Bob facts? Just pick a subject out of a hat and then give a fact about it.
Pick a subject out of a fact.
Out of a fact.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know. I don't know either.
But thank you all for joining us here on Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest. If you're having a great time, and I know you are because we make a great show,
yeah.
I would like to encourage you to go leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever else you found us. In fact, we have a perfect 5.0 rating on both of those services.
Woo!
I just mentioned. And in fact, I would like to read a recent 5-star review on Apple Podcasts from Darkin520. Titled, Such a Great Companion. This podcast is wonderful and hilarious. I love this show, but also understand it has very humorous moments. I adore SeaQuest and also love this podcast. I binged the current 7 episodes in 2 days.
Oh my God.
And can't wait for more. Oh my goodness, thank you so much. And I'm so glad to see that we are meeting the extant SeaQuest fandom.
Yes.
What an exciting thing to learn.
This is all I've wanted in my life. For there to be more of us.
Oh, what a feeling it will be when a throwback bound is finally noticed by the people of Sri Lanka, who are apparently nuts for Spellbinder.
That's all I just want one, just one person from there to listen to the episode and be like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been waiting for. And I'll be so happy. That's all I want. So you, whether you're from there or not, should go listen to Throwback Bound.
Mm-hmm,
it's my other
mm-hmm.
podcast. It's really good.
You should also tell your friends, tell your family, you know what? I'm going to break out one of the old classics.
Barista.
Tell your barista about Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest. They're going to thank you.
You know, you got to change up the conversation. You can't just talk about tattoos.
As far as I can tell, it's their favorite thing to talk about, though.
I get so many compliments.
So get a tattoo of the SeaQuest or of Darwin or of B-Drop's incredible cover art for Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
It's so cute.
I'd get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would need, like, drugs to be able to because you'd pass out in 2 seconds.
Yes.
Do you want me to get it for you and then you can look at it? I could get the hammerhead shark.
Yeah.
Silhouette. Yeah. So yeah, do those things, and that'd be great.
Those of you who are subscribed to patreon.com/chipandironicus for whatever reason already know this, but Elena joined me on the most recent episode of Bizarre Podcast Space Puppets.
It did.
Farscape came up a little bit in conversation as this was a David Kemper episode,
mm-hmm.
but that is a show where my best friend from high school and I talk about every episode of Farscape. We just finished season 3, about to begin the home stretch. At the end of every season, I invite Elena on instead to talk about the season as a whole, talk about a selection of like interviews and behind the scenes stuff so it doesn't bog down the regular episodes too much, and be a little more spoiler accepting, a little less strict.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one wasn't terribly spoiler heavy, but
no.
Like, we mentioned some things that Josh didn't know yet at the time we said them. You know, a couple little things.
Yeah.
But that's the idea. We had a great time talking about whether Stark is interesting or not.
Go listen to find out. That's all I'll say. Go listen.
There might be some disagreement on some points.
We might have some different opinions.
What else did we talk about?
We talked about a sweater.
We talked about Gigi Edgley.
Oh my God. I love her. She is such a feral little circus child and I love her so much.
But that's enough things for you to keep in mind. We are going to head out.
Mm-hmm. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future. I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Wist.
I was about to say Sequest. This is Sequest.
This is Sequest. That's what we're doing. We're just talking about Sequest. I'll do that again.
Thank you.